The best podcast in baseball is brought to you by Closets by Design. Update your closet, garage, office, pantry, and more. Imagine your home totally organized with Closets by Design. Call 1-800-BY-DESIGN. That's 1-800-BY-DESIGN.
Welcome to a brand new BPIB. In this edition of the best podcast in baseball, I get a chance to talk with Chip Carey about the question that he asked MLBPA Chief Executive Tony Clark about reorganizing the divisions around economic situation and market size, not just geography. Plus, we talk about him hopping in the booth for the spring breakout game with a prospect straight out of his own family. His son, Stefan, will be on the call with him in the press box and on the broadcast. Cue the music. Bring in Mike Farron.
The best fans in baseball deserve the best podcast in baseball. It's BPIB. Here's your host, Derek Gould.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the best podcast in baseball, brought to you by Closets by Design of St. Louis. I'm St. Louis Post-Dispatch baseball editor Derek Gould, joined today, and I'm thrilled to have him, by Cardinals broadcaster Chip Carey. Chip, thank you very much for joining me. We're baking under the sun here on the Cardinals Clubhouse Plaza, yes. Which yesterday is where you asked Tony Clark just a fascinating question, so I just want to jump right into that. You brought up the notion of realignment by economical situation, by economy. So gone are the NL gone would be the NL Central, and in its place would be the NL tax bracket.
I haven't thought that far ahead of it, but look, I think we all agree that at some point expansion's coming, right? I think that's probably a foregone conclusion. Where and who and all of that has yet to be determined, but once baseball gets to 32 teams, you then have the opportunity to have 8 four-team divisions. You could still have 2 wild cards, so your 12-team playoff would still exist. My idea was to give the smaller market teams a fighting chance by trying to play more against each other. For example, it doesn't make economic sense, in my opinion, for the Tampa Bay Rays to be in the same division with the Red Sox or the Yankees, or even the Colorado Rockies against the big dollar Dodgers. So why not have divisions of like economic and geographically aligned teams slug it out, as well as have a division of, say, Cleveland, Cincinnati, Detroit, and Milwaukee, for example. Those teams then could compete for the same players. They would be in a like situation economically as far as population size and TV market and the like. And the best thing of all is, if you have three or four of those smaller market divisions, three or four of your smaller market teams are going to the postseason tournament every year, which theoretically gives everybody around baseball a chance to say, hey, we've got a shot. You have to have a great deal of respect, in my opinion, for what Tampa Bay has been able to do as one of the smallest markets. Milwaukee, another one, going head toe-to-toe with the Cardinals and the Cubs. But I just think that the time has come to look at this from an economic standpoint, because I don't know we're ever going to solve the economic disparities like the NFL has in our sport. And maybe that's one way that we can make things a little bit more level, as it were, when it comes to the opportunity to play in postseason.
I honestly thought that, like, Major League Baseball almost subtly attempted this by doing away with the imbalanced schedule. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, the Rockies weren't having to go up against the Dodgers 19 times, but they got to see the Twins more often. Mm-hmm. It hasn't really worked out, maybe, like they tried to subtly do, but that's because the economics just radically changed, and you saw the disparity even grow.
Yeah, and look, that's the big problem, right? New York, L.A., Chicago, Houston, those are big markets, and they deserve all the credit and all the glory that goes along with that, right? But in my opinion, the economic interests of the game and the fans, look, if you go to Yankee Stadium, you're not watching the Yankees play the Yankees, you're watching the Yankees play the Rockies that day, all right? So right. So the other owners have a vested interest in promoting and making it as, I don't want to say fair, but giving those guys a shot, too. And that's what the beauty of, like, the NFL model, right? They don't have really everybody plays everybody, and they share all the money. I don't know, again, that that's ever going to happen in our game, but I thought that a geographic and economic realignment would be a great way to at least broach the subject and see if it works. It may not, but it's clear that the disparities aren't changing in our game. When the Dodgers can defer $1 billion in salaries, there's no way that many other places can compete with that, and that's something I think has to be addressed.
When it becomes, you know, like a self-fulfilling prophecy, because they sign more stars, more stars want to go there, they can afford more stars, guys want to go there to win. I mean, we see that gravitate. Even a guy who has, like Roki Sasaki, who has his earnings capped, product and really could have been available to everybody. He chose the Dodgers, so the rich got richer in that regard.
Well, yeah, and that's never going to change, right? And that's what Tony Clark was talking about yesterday, and that's always been the case, right? Everybody bemoaned George Steinbrenner signing Reggie Jackson and Dave Winfield and Catfish Hunter and all these other guys, and that's never, ever going to change. I think that the landscape in our sport has changed so dramatically now that we are in the economic fight for our lives. Every single team is fighting for every dollar with the broadband world of entertainment options that we have around us, not just in sports. And if we can give people a feeling that, hey, their team has a chance. I mean, if you're a fan of the Marlins and Rockies this year, they have 0% chance of going to the playoffs. That's a tough sell. And ultimately, I don't think that's good for the game. And so finding a way that makes sense economically, geographically, and maybe creates more opportunities for spending and gets more players bigger contracts and better product on the field, hey, why not take a look at it?
Yeah, it's. I find the description that you gave of getting more small market teams into playoffs to increase the probability because of the just sometimes the random nature. I know they don't like that, but the random nature of October, it takes a pitcher getting hot or a pitcher getting hurt. I mean, the Cardinals know that offense can go cold in 2019 and the Nationals have a great scouting report and absolutely shut down an offense, or a closer's finger can stiffen up and the Cardinals can lose to the Phillies. You increase the probability of one of those small market teams piercing the later rounds of the postseason.
And we saw that last year. I mean, think about that series with Cleveland and the Yankees, right? The ballpark in Cleveland was rocking. And when John Kinsey and Noel hit that home run, that place was shaking to the foundations. And that's really what we all want, right? It's you want to see Goliath get slain. And you want to at least see a chance for that. That's why people love the NCAA tournament, right? The Cinderella stories, the 16th seed taking on the number one seed. And it's an upset. I mean, that's what drives the tournament. And as we know in our sport, it is random. The playoffs are a random occurrence. Like hockey, you get a hot goaltender and a good defense, right, you can go a long way toward winning the Stanley Cup. And it's a matter of when you get hot, and to be able to do that, you at least have an invitation to the dance.
Absolutely. And while talking to Tony Clark, walking away from that, one of the things that I was thinking about was, how often do small market teams kind of get through? It's a lot less in baseball than maybe even the teams are advertising themselves. The last small market team to win a World Series in the bottom 15 of market size was the Royals. So if you're talking about one team from that bottom 15 piercing through, winning a championship every 10 years, and now you could argue that that group has expanded to 18, 19, 20 teams when you talk about the mid-markets, then the randomness suddenly comes into play where you're looking at once every 10 years, one out of 18 teams. You start doing the numbers, and it could be a long time, if ever, before a Rockies gets through, even before like the Cardinals get through the next time. It's just too much.
It's a small percentage. It's hard. And look, it all comes down to really simply drafting, scouting, developing, and then promoting to the major leagues, right? And I think that's the model that's always going to work in our game. You know, we saw last year the Cardinals were forced to buy their rotation, and it won them 83 games, but it didn't get them any further than watching the playoffs last year.
Right.
You know, I'm not saying that we are trying to make up for what these teams aren't doing, but the playing field doesn't appear to be as level as we would like it to be. And I think to increase interest, to increase opportunity, and to increase probably spending and ultimately a better product for our game, I think that that sort of dramatic shifting of how we look at the game is coming. Look, we're playing by the same rules. The National and American League doesn't exist.
Right.
we ease travel. We have like teams. Playing everybody, I'm kind of still in favor of. I don't like it as much as I thought I would. But I also didn't like when I was with the Braves playing the Marlins 19 times when they were awful.
Right.
It's so finding that happy, delicate balance is way above my pay grade. But it's something fun to talk about. It's something fun to think about. I've talked about it for about a decade, and I don't know. I doubt anything will happen with it. But certainly, if you expand, as I said, two more teams, you have a chance to at least get very, very creative in how we rebrand our game, like the hockey tournament in the middle of this.
The Four Nations
thing.
Yeah.
That was fun.
Brilliant. Yeah.
Right.
And
maybe,
well, it's kind of a World Baseball Classic. Let's give credit where credit's due. I mean, baseball did do that.
Along that idea, I would love somehow, some way, to have a 10-day celebration of our sport in the middle of the season, right?
Yep.
Futures game, All-Star game, have the semifinals and finals of the World Baseball Classic, have the draft, and have a worldwide celebration of our sport. Now, I know you got to worry about pitchers and how they stay in shape and all of that kind of stuff, but if there was a way to do that, that I think would be something very exciting. But look, bottom line is, for older guys like us who've been around, I think it's inevitable that at some point we're going to see a dramatic change in the way that we present our game, a dramatic change in the way the games are staged, and a dramatic change in the perception of our sport. And sometimes change is good. Yeah. Sometimes change sparks even greater growth in the game. And I'm really, really pleased, though, that both Tony Clark and Major League Baseball are at least thinking in bigger, broader strokes than the micro of, hey, this guy got hurt, or this team's spending too much money, or Ohtani's got a billion deferred.
Oh, absolutely. You know what? Actually, I was talking with somebody last night, and I brought that up. I was like, you know, Tony Clark specifically mentioning the small market teams, and whether you agree with the union's proposal or not to tie, like, draft picks or to increase incentives for small market teams to win, and if your concern is that that just makes them farm systems for talent that then is signed elsewhere, fine. Whatever you believe. But for him to articulate that there was a concern and not just this notion that, no, players should go where the best, most money is, I thought that was a real awareness and maybe even a window into where things could go in the next CBA.
Well, yeah, when we were kids, right, the players you fell in love with were the guys that played their entire careers for one team. And I am in no way, shape, or form saying player movement's a bad thing. It's fantastic. But when you think of the Chipper Joneses of the world, for example, in Atlanta, I mean, he played his whole career as a member of the Atlanta Braves. He's an iconic guy, and he's in the Hall of Fame. You watch those guys get to the show and wonder, is he going to Cooperstown? Well, he was the one that did that. He could have gotten more money elsewhere, but he was comfortable and happy and part of a winning culture there. And once you create that, as you said, that's what players gravitate to. Do they take care of my family? Do the fans take care of the players? How's the media? How's the weather? What are the amenities? And, okay, oh, by the way, let's go win, too. If you have all of those things, like some of these bigger markets have and like the Cardinals are getting back to, well, then you've got magic.
Imagine your home totally organized. Closets by Design is offering 40% off plus an additional 15% and free installation. Schedule your free consultation today. Call 1-800-BY-DESIGN for details. That's 1-800-BY-DESIGN.
All right, let's talk about the point where your idea here, your presentation, your notion of an economic realignment meets your personal history. And that is, of course, everybody knows the history of your family. It's really tied to both the Cardinals and the Cubs. Any economic realignment is going to look a lot like the folks in New York always try to push on us, where it separates the Cubs and the Cardinals. Would you be comfortable with that, with them not being in the same division, with that rivalry? Which, you want to hear my cool tidbit about that rivalry?
Sure, go. Okay. Yeah, go.
It's the longest running rivalry in Major League Baseball between two teams that have never left their cities. The Cardinals started as a direct competitor to the Cubs, and they've never left those spots, which I think is fascinating. It predates the Yankees, Red Sox, predates all of them. This is the one.
Right.
So your realignment would rip that apart.
Maybe. But, I mean, that's a delicate balance, right? Is baseball, I think, in some ways, sometimes is imprisoned by its history. We can't have the DH in the National League. But we can't have pitch clock. Right, I get it. Let's take away the lights and play all day games and wear bull uniforms and travel by train, too, right?
So train sounds nice.
That would be great. If you get the map out, and you think about the traditional rivalries, and you think about the geography and market to a certain extent, you could have a division: Royals, Cardinals, Cubs, White Sox.
You could.
Yeah. I mean, it's not perfect from the economic sense, and I'm sure there will be blips on the radar. But do owners want a division where you have Mets, Yankees, Phillies, Red Sox, where one of those teams is probably going to get knocked out because there's only going to be two wild cards and one division winner? I mean, there's going to have to be give and take. Not going to be a perfect system, but there have, believe it or not, been years where the Dodgers and the Yankees and the Mets don't make the playoffs and the world goes on. But again, that's what makes it fun. It's just like arguing around the water cooler, safe or out, fair or foul. It's a cool thing to at least think about. And when you think about the new rivalries that could be created, right?
Yeah.
You could have Seattle, Vegas, Colorado, and if they put an expansion team in Salt Lake City, I mean, it it makes perfect sense.
Cardinals-Nashville would be the obvious one.
Cardinals-Nashville would be a great one. You know, or you could have Atlanta-Nashville, Tampa Bay-Miami. I mean, there's myriad ways to look at it. But it's just a fun exercise to think about, and it's something to ponder. And I wonder, again, once we get to 32 teams, the world of possibilities, I think, will be wide open. And I hope there's enough cooperation that we can all take advantage of that.
Well, all the owners will get a windfall of cash. That's what expansion brings. Yeah. All of them will, and it coincides with 2028 when also a new streaming kind of national platform is expected also. I mean, the numbers are telling. You look back the last 10 years, 70% of the teams in the playoffs are from the top 15 markets. 80% of the teams that make it to the championship series in both leagues are from the larger markets. 9 out of 10 are from the larger markets.
Right. As you know, spending money doesn't guarantee you anything. But not spending does. And I think that stat that you just pointed out is exactly where it is. Look, you know, teams can only do what they can do. And I'm not here to judge what they do or don't do from an economic standpoint. But the teams that have a chance to win are the teams that have first drafted, developed, and gotten their own players to the major leagues. Mm-hmm. Secondly, supplemented their roster with wise trades and waiver wire and Rule 5 pickups. And then they sign the right guy at the right time, and they don't live to regret the deal at the end. I mean, that's it's not easy. It's an easy formula, not easy to execute. And the teams that have done it best are the teams that consistently are the ones heading to a playoff baseball.
You touched on prospects, and of course, Major League Baseball has adopted the breakout game, the spring breakout game, where it's a showcase for prospects. It's a chance for some of the younger players from all levels, which I think is kind of cool. It kind of allows a team to pick their own futures game roster. And you have picked a futures game prospect as well. Yeah. You'll be calling the game with your son, Stefan. I wondered, what's the preparation like for that, and how much are you looking forward to that?
Well, I told him to say, "You're right, Dad," a lot. the great thing about it is Stefan is such a pro already. I mean, he's done minor league baseball. Mm-hmm. He's done by himself. He's done radio. He's done TV. So from that standpoint, it'll be just like the two of us sitting here talking, I hope. The cool thing for him is, while I've been working at the major league level, he's seen a bunch of these kids in AA. So there's some familiarity both with the guys on the Marlins team and the Cardinals. And I think that'll be a big security blanket for him as well. But he's funny. He's glib. He's articulate. He's, as I keep saying, he's got all of the good of mom and the bad of dad. And somehow he's been able to achieve so much so far. And I'm really, really proud of him. Can't wait to do the game on Friday.
What does that mean? Like, four generations of your family have echoed through baseball, have kind of been the soundtrack for summer. And, you know, the fourth generation is just starting up, but it's, you know, you have one son calling A's games, another one here doing Cardinal games on the streaming for KMOX. I mean, what does that allow for your family to do? And you're tied to baseball.
It's kind of scary. We're like the cold. You can't get rid of us. But, you know, this year, it's funny you bring it up. This is our family's 80th year.
80, wow.
Doing Major League Baseball. Harry started with the Cardinals in 1945, and I started in 1991. So, you know, it's just what we do. I mean, I think if you ask my wife, she'd tell you that there's really, I'm not capable of doing much else besides saying ground ball to second.
Yeah.
But it's what we do. We love the game. We love talking about it. We love the shared passion of seeing young guys get to the major leagues and take off and do their thing. And like I said earlier, with regards to Chipper Jones, will Brendan Donovan go to Cooperstown? Is Mason Wynn on his way? What's Jordan Walker going to turn into in 4 or 5 years? That's the fun of peeling away those 162 layers of onion each and every year. And to be able to do that with my kid is a real thrill. And I will say that the proverbial torch passing that takes place, it's a little different when you're on the getting side as opposed to the giving side. Because I remember when I was 24, 25 years old, stepping into a booth for the first time, and I was like, I can't believe I'm here. And I think he's kind of having those same kind of moments, and we're all really, really thrilled for the warm reception he's gotten.
Had a little bit of that whiplash when you were there. Tony Clark was saying, well, you've been around a long time, which is a nice way of saying you're old. He said that to me, and I remember Tony Clark, the player, going, are you new here? Like, you look pretty young to be covering me. So I'm like, we're the same guys. It's been a long time.
That's it. I mean, we grow up and we grow old with the game, and that's what's so fun. And I think, I know you do. I think all of your colleagues, the guys and gals I work with on the radio and TV side, we all feel a tremendous responsibility of passing this along, right? It's not lost on me the seat that I occupy and the people that were there before me. And it's my hope that when my time is done, that I've left it in as good, if not better, shape for the next person to have the greatest job in sports, and that's talking about a team that I grew up watching and adoring as a kid in St. Louis, the Cardinals.
I feel deeply about that. I feel it resonate here a lot when I see the folks who aren't here, who came before me and are no longer here. I'll catch you. I'll just I don't mean to ambush you with this question, but so 80 years, have you looked into where that puts your family in, like, longevity in the game? The DeWitts are 104 or 105, but I got to imagine it's very few families that have that kind of continuity.
I don't know. I never really thought about that. You know, frankly, if you think of the personalities of the three of us that have done the major leagues, not counting my son Chris, who's just starting, the fact that we've made it 80 years is somewhat miraculous. Yeah. But no, I haven't. But I am proud of that. You know, Harry grew up in St. Louis, was an orphan. You know, just the strength of his personality. He loved the game. He was a little second baseman at Webster Groves mm-hmm. High School. Couldn't afford a scholarship bus ride or train ride to Alabama, where he was going to play, and he was in St. Louis and loved the Cardinals and got the job and didn't let go of it until 69 or 70. And at least here, you know, I couldn't imagine doing anything else. And the old adage is really, really true. If you do something, as you know, Derek, if you do something that you love, you never work a day in your life.
Yeah.
There are days where it's work. It's a job. But it's a great job, and to be able to work with Mark Sweeney and Brad Thompson and all of my wonderful friends is a dream come true, and we don't take it lightly, and we love every minute of it.
I like the way you describe Stefan's approach to broadcast. You call him glib, funny, humorous, a lot of improvisation. You have your style of storytelling. Harry had his style of storytelling. How do you stay current with that? How do you find your way to, like, not allow that to evolve too?
Well, that's the great thing about working with young partners, right? And being around young people. I think we would all agree. I just turned 60. I can't believe that, but I just turned 60. And when you're around young people help keep you young, because you have to be sharp. You have to stay in touch with my kids. Make me watch South Park. I mean, you know, so that's the best part of the job, is you're around young people. They keep you young. They keep you thinking young, and they see the world in a very different way, which is so refreshing. Look, we could sit here, you and I, old dinosaurs. Oh, we don't need the designated hitter, and we need to go back to flannel uniforms, and you know, the Cardinals need to put more astroturf. Whatever the heck it is, if you don't evolve, you die in our game, right? You don't. If you don't change, you become obsolete. And working with Brad and Mark and Jim Edmonds in the past kept me young. They offer different perspectives. They're a generation younger than I am. And to their credit, they've allowed me to be me. But to their immense credit, they have really, I think, rejuvenated me to where it's where it's not the drudgery of 162 games. We never count them off the schedule. We really, the game's over, we're almost sad because we've got to wait 12 hours or 13 hours to get back to the ballpark, and I think that's a great, great thing.
How has the way you call a game changed?
Pitch clocks made a tremendous difference. You know, obviously, just from a macro standpoint, we don't have time to delve into all of those great stories that you were talking about. We have to really weave them in quickly, and you have to give time to your analyst. As you can tell, I'm not afraid to talk, but I think that's forced me in a good way to realize that the medium of television is I don't have to talk all the time, and we can get into a story and talk about things that while the game's going on. I was on the Cardinals cruise a couple of years ago, and a gentleman who's sight impaired was giving me grief because he said, "You're in the middle of a story, or Jim's telling a story about playing outfield, and I hear the pop of the ball, and you're not saying ball one, ball two." And I said, "Well, I know this doesn't help you, but it is a visual medium. People that are watching the game can see that." So finding that right balance of how much to say, how little to say, how much time do you have for your partner, plus all the commercials and drop-ins and things that we're obligated to do, there really isn't that much meat left on the bone to delve into long soliloquies about the 1934 Gas House Gang Cardinals. But we try, and we laugh, and we have a good time, and hopefully we are able to give the people what they want, which is, as we say in the disclaimer, the descriptions and accounts of the game.
You've been here at spring training for a while now, preparing both for the broadcast but also preparing for the spring breakout. What's been your sense of this camp as the Cardinals I don't know what are they calling it now? Transition.
What reword do you want to use?
We're done with the rewords.
Hasn't it been interesting?
We've rejected the rewords.
Well, there you go. Right, but hasn't it been interesting?
Yeah.
I mean, people asked me earlier in the spring, what grade would you give, and I said incomplete because the initial plan was obviously Nolan and his situation. Now that he's here, I sense from him He's fired up. He's ready to go. I think he has, I don't want to say embarrassed. That's not the right word. I think he was really self-disappointed in his year last year and has shouldered some of the blame for what happened offensively.
Yeah, he's articulated that.
He's been very clear about that, and I think he's a big candidate for a rebound. And look, with a young team, a fired up and motivated Nolan Arenado is a really, really good thing. He's going to make this team better. I love the opportunities that these young guys are going to get. Ollie has said this. I know you've talked to him and Mo about it. At the end of the year, the Cardinals have to know, what is Nolan Gorman, what is Jordan Walker, and what is whatever the components that make up our bullpen and starting rotation. Mm-hmm. Anything less than that is a disappointment. We've got to know going into next offseason when a lot of money comes off the books and the Cardinals will have an opportunity in both trade and free agency to make a big impact. But I'm a glass half full guy when it comes to baseball. I think this team's going to play with a chip on its shoulder. I think that nobody around the country is giving them much chance of doing anything. I think that's a mistake. I think this team almost by accident has to be better offensively than they were last year. And with virtually the same kind of pitching and pitching staff with some opportunities for younger guys, I think if nothing else, the Cardinals are going to be very entertaining and exciting from that standpoint.
You look at, and we're talking just a few minutes after they signed Phil Maton, the reliever from Chatham, Illinois, grew up a Cardinal fan, has long been a why wasn't he a Cardinal. The Cardinals have tried to trade for him a few times. A year ago, they talked to him about signing and then went Keenan Middleton. So he's been, like, in the air around here quite a bit. And then, of course, pitched against them. His addition is interesting because, as I said, he's been kind of in the air around here a long time. But that's because they were trying to contend and win now. And he has that look. It's their first major league signing of the offseason. Right. It comes on the eve of the regular season with only a few weeks to go. Does it send a different message? Is it a little, to use another RE word, retro, that they bring him in here?
Well, I'm glad they didn't pass the baton this time. Sorry, I had to do that. No, I think it's good. Look.
Oh, my gosh, that's going to be great. You're going to use it for the eighth inning. Okay. And here comes out Ollie Marmol to pass the baton to Ryan Helsley.
You stole my thunder again. Yeah, right. But I think it sends a message that, hey, wait a minute, we're trying to win. And okay. I think that's what my sense is, to get back to your question from a moment ago, what's getting lost in this? People think the Cardinals are just going to be a 4A team and just play guys for the sake of playing. I don't think that's the case at all. The goal here is to win. The goal here is to win games, and a guy like Phil Maton, who's going to take the role of Andrew Kittredge, essentially, helps you do that. Ryan Helsley wasn't traded because the Cardinals think they're a better team with him and can compete with him. The same with Contreras, the same with Sonny Gray, and ostensibly Arenado. So I don't know that it's a mixed message as much as it's a delicate tightrope that you have to walk, right, between runway for the future and trying to win games now. And if the Cardinals can get off to a good start, get some wins under their belt, not bury themselves like they did 2 years ago, then, hey, man, in our division, it's anybody's guess. Who knows what the Cubs are going to do? Who knows what Milwaukee's going to do? The Pirates or Cincinnati, and that's what makes it fun. We think we know, but we don't know until the ball's in play, and that starts on the 27th.
I call it the most polite division in baseball.
Yeah, that's about right. Yeah, we should all be in Canada.
Yeah. Right? No, it's very polite Midwestern. Yeah. Like, hey, you want to contend? We'll open the door for you. Yeah. No, come on in.
As long as you let us do it a little later on in the summer, right? Yeah. So, I mean, it's going to be, I don't want it, you take it again.
Yeah.
But I have always felt that the most exciting and the most fun seasons are the unexpected ones, either when you're really good or you're not, right? Because you just don't know. And I guarantee you that every single one of those guys in that locker room is not approaching opening day saying, hey, we're going to suck. Mm-hmm. No, they're going to want to prove to everybody in St. Louis, Cardinals Nation, to themselves and the rest of the division, hey, last 2 years are not what the Cardinals are all about. We're on our way back. And we'll see if that happens.
What do you think the vibe is that the manager, you've talked to him, what do you think he's trying to set? To us, publicly, he talks about, we understand where we are as an organization. It is about runway. It's about youth. He's saying those things. And, some of that we'll see manifest in his actions, right? Like he might not pinch hit for a Gorman in a game where he says this is an experience he needs to get. This is an answer we need to get. We might see moves like that this season because it's not, the thumb isn't on the win now button. But you're in talking with him, and you watch him talk to the players. What do you think the message is to them that he's trying to set a little bit? You touched on like a chip on the shoulder. Is it a little bit of like, hey, they doubt you, do better?
That and here's your chance, right?
Oh,
because because I think in the past, maybe the perception was if I go for 8, I may sit for a week because there's a veteran player here. And I have to go out and I've got to play perfect in order to not only play but stay. Mm-hmm. That's not going to be on the table, I don't think, which maybe will allow guys to play looser and freer and not have that proverbial shadow of the man with the scythe over your shoulder every other day in the major leagues. Look, Ollie's a player development guy. He's a Kissel guy. He understands what the Cardinals' organizational DNA has been about. I think he's excited about it. As we know, again, going back to our, hey, we've been around a long time theory, the game...
I'm not real comfortable with this cover.
but the game has changed so much in that there's so much more teaching and development that goes on up here.
It used to
be guys would get here and they're relatively finished products. That's not the case anymore.
Oh, you'll love this. When we were standing right where we are talking right now, we stood here and I got to say it was 2008. It would have been 2008. And Tony La Russa, this was about Anthony Reyes. I hope I remember this correctly, all these details. Anthony Reyes pitched really well, but Tony La Russa was like, no, I don't really see a role for him in the bullpen because he doesn't have experience. And Mozeliak goes, as an organization, we need to know what this guy is, right? This is a year plus removed from him winning game one of the World Series, and he's still like the top prospect, but is he a starter for them? And Tony La Russa said, we're not in the development business. And that line has kind of echoed for a little bit, even though it's 13 years past date. But what the Cardinals haven't been in, is they haven't been in the patient business. They have not been patient with prospects because of the pressure to
and
win.
And the expectations of winning, right? And that's the challenge, right? Let's use a 2025 Cardinals position battle. I think if you looked at it on paper with 2 weeks to go in spring training, Victor Scott has had the better spring than Michael Ciani. I don't think there's any really questioning that.
Right.
Well, the Cardinals gave Victor Scott a chance last year. He wasn't ready for it, and he flopped in his first month in the major leagues, and Ciani came on and nearly won the Gold Glove. This spring, I think Michael has one, maybe two hits.
Yeah.
So he does, though, have a back of the bubblegum card. So if you're the manager of the organization, where are the scales of justice? Who gets that opportunity? A guy that you, again, on a team want consistency from and need defense, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Versus a club that at times has been and certainly has this spring shown that they're offensively challenged right now. Well, that's the kind of tough decision that Ollie and Mo and the rest of the organization has to make. And that's just one position.
Yeah.
So that's going to be fun to watch.
And the past Cardinals would have gone with Lars Nootbaar in center field, possibly going for the offense, and they still may.
Right. But is he a center fielder?
I mean, it's like
we were talking about the division. You can make a very strong case for every single team and a very strong case against every single team. And the same can be true for all of the players that are fighting for these jobs. What's their best attribute? What's their worst attribute? And does the best outweigh the worst? I think it's a fascinating discussion.
Are you eager to see Mozeliak at the GM meetings? We were talking, and he said, I'm eager to see what happens when expectations are alleviated, meaning when the expectations of the logo are taken off and the young players only have the expectations of themselves and how they play with that.
I don't know that that ever changes, right? I don't think it should. It's big leagues. This is a performance-based place, right? It's the big leagues. And, you come here, there's an expectation that has been born for 100-plus years here, and it's an honor to represent the organization. It's an honor to play for the organization. And as I said, these guys want to create their own destiny, their own holy grail, as it were.
Mm-hmm.
And in 4 or 5 years, if not sooner, when we get a chance to all have a parade down Market Street and we can say, remember what happened 2 years ago, well, that'll be a lot of fun, too.
All right, last thing for you. Speaking of 4 or 5 years from now, you mentioned, like, the global notion, like that Four Nations World Baseball Classic. Los Angeles 2028, the Olympics are coming, and you just got me thinking about this. You have this idea that, I mean, Cooperstown's already pushed back their ceremony, which is notable for Cardinal fans because that is the Albert Pujols ceremony and the Yadier Molina potentially year. I mean, would you like to see that? You talk about taking a 10-day pause. Would you love to see major leaguers in the Olympics?
Sure. Why not? I'm open for anything. Anything that helps grow the game internationally is good for baseball. Obviously, there's risk involved in anything. But the more eyes that we get on our great players and the more of our great players that can get on and stay on the field, I think it's more the merrier.
Chip, thank you very much. Enjoy the time with your son. I'm really looking forward to hearing how that goes.
Thanks, man. He'll be great. I'm not so sure about me.
Oh, come on now. Thanks to Chip Carey for joining me there on the Cardinals clubhouse patio, and a special thanks to his family that waited patiently as we talked through all that. I thought his idea of realignment based on economy and market size was fascinating, and of course that was only the beginning of what we talked about. You can find Chip Carey all season long at FanDuel Sports Network. That is the current name of the former Bally Sports Midwest. Of course, Chip is the play-by-play voice of the Cardinals for all of your television broadcasts. But first, before he does his next one of those Cardinals games, he's going to do the Cardinals breakout game there for FanDuel Sports Network with his son, Steph. Look for that Friday, March 14th. That is Friday, March 14th for the spring breakout game there on FanDuel Sports Network. And, of course, I think we'll see how this season plays off, and I'll have to try to ask him back, though maybe we'll find shade this time. You can find all of the Post-Dispatch's constant Cardinals coverage at stltoday.com and in the pages of the Post-Dispatch. You can, of course, find the best podcast in baseball anywhere you get your podcast. That includes iTunes, where you can rate and review it, and please do go rate and review it. Seriously, leave a review, any type of review. Just tell us a little bit about what you like or want to see improved about the podcast. It's its 13th season, and it really only exists because of the community of listeners that have developed around it and been supportive of it for all these years. The best podcast in baseball is brought to you weekly by Closets by Design of St. Louis. Sponsorships make the podcast possible, and listeners like you make those sponsorships possible. Spring is winding down. Opening day is nigh. The special section deadline calls, and we're off to try to meet it. Talk to you soon.